They might all look good.
Okay.
So whatever.
Yeah, whatever comes to mind. I don't know. Did you have anything you wanted to kick on?
Not anything in particular.
Okay. I actually have written... I have my notebook.
Aha!
I keep a notebook. Notebook. It's not... Oh, it's a little... I have to retire this notebook, actually. I'm only like 10 pages from the end, though, so... Just a few more things. So, I have a few things here. I'm sure we'll be able to talk at length at any of the stuff, but just in case, handy. If you need a notebook, I have extras.
I'm good.
You could.
My handwriting, I can barely understand. Computers have ruined me.
So, do you keep notes on your phone at all, or?
Yeah, well, on my iPod.
Okay.
Like my iPod Touch.
Yeah.
And then on my computer.
So, if I can suggest an app to you, it's called Simple Note,
mm-hmm.
and the app is free, and there's a website, I think it's simplenoteapp.com or something like that, and it essentially just keeps the notes in Dropbox.
Oh, okay.
But it's accessible from the phone, and you can edit from the phone, which is nice, because otherwise, I mean, you can get Dropbox on your phone, but
right.
All you can do is view it.
Mm-hmm.
So I like it. And the app, I think, is... I have a full-blown app, but it's a web app, too, so you can get it from any computer. You just go to simplenoteapp.com and log in, and then it opens up your list of notes, and you can, like, tag your notes and stuff like that. It's actually really cool. I like it. But only because it's... you know, I've put a few things in there that are, like, you know, I never remember, like... my mileage plus number for United, because
right.
I can't remember that. There's no way I'm going to... And I don't carry the card on me, so I leave the note there. And I do that for other things like shopping lists, because then I can edit it on the computer, and then it's with me on the phone, and stuff like that. But obviously, you need Wi-Fi whenever you're going to see it. Yeah.
Living in an iPhone-less world.
It's probably okay. I think you're doing all right. The reliance on smartphones is getting really high. It's starting to become... I mean, there's some cool things about it. One of the ones I wanted to talk about this week is that it kind of ties into the kind of a complaint I had, because I just got a new set of credit cards and it always annoys me because they change the number. I mean, they change the expiration date, which is fine because, you know, it has to move.
It's a new card.
But on the back, they change the verification number, which now I had been using enough to buy stuff that I'd kind of memorized, and now it's useless because I've changed credit cards now. Or it's the same credit card, but it's a different verification number, so now I have to remember that, because I can just kind of look at it in the sleeve and type the number in.
Mm-hmm.
Or more realistically, I've bought so much stuff, I can just type the number in without looking now, which is really sad. But it's just what annoys me is how many things there are, I guess, to prevent credit card fraud, that it's annoying people that aren't fraudulent. Like me, at least I... Yeah. Yeah, I'm not fraudulent. That's gonna be right.
Not
I mean,
officially.
Yeah. The producers of Another Thing podcast would like to apologize for me. Now I. You use a credit card at a place, you have to show them the card, or you have to show them ID, or. And I don't know, I'm not familiar enough with, like, the different things that are involved in, like, the verification process, or how prevalent it is that people are scamming cards, but, it's just annoying that there's so many different things that are related to that.
Yeah, I think that just kind of is a whole part of our culture now, that... just having the information that you think you should have isn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you need verification so it's not fraud. It's the same kind of rationale as, we have to have TSA to prevent things from happening, and it's a lot more stuff you have to go through, but it's to protect you.
Yeah.
Your TSA for your credit score.
I may opt
as long
out.
As they don't have like full body scan for use of your credit cards. Like, I just want to buy some apples.
Not yet. I'm sure they'll figure a way. But coming back to what I was saying about phones and how there are different things that I think are interesting about how phones are being used, like for payment, because I think. Mm-hmm. That kind of stuff is somewhat interesting to me because it's like you have access to money without having like physical money, and I know, I mean, a credit card is just like a piece of that, but there's so many different ways that could be like done through, like the whole thing with Google Wallet where your phone does that, you know, near field communication thing where you tap it against the thing and it pays and it automatically debits out of whatever. I think that stuff is, I mean, it's very like futuristic cool, right? You don't have to bring your wallet out to pay. And I know that part of it is like it's cool from a convenience factor, but I'm sure it's also cool for a convenience factor from the credit card company's point of view, because it's like it's that much easier for you to pay, so of course you're going to. But I still think that's an interesting use of technology, because I mean I think as you know, as king as cash is, it is annoying sometimes to deal with. I don't know, do you have to deal with that very much? Do people, Is it mostly cash? Is it mostly credit card where you work?
It's a pretty even split at my place of business, which will remain nameless.
Sure. For the protection of the innocent.
Well, mostly because that place sucks. but I'd say there's a good split between cash and credit use.
Mm-hmm.
We have certain procedures in place to verify credit card usage, which are generally, I think, ignored.
Oh.
There's so many. It's a hard thing to regulate when couples share credit cards, or there'll be a husband holding the wife's credit card, the wife holding husband's credit card, and they'll pay with that. It's like, your name is clearly not Bob, miss.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but what are you going to say? Oh, come back, get your husband. He's got to be here.
Yeah.
It's just an extra hassle.
And bring a thumbprint and a retina scan. Would you?
Well, we do now have thumbprint clock in at my place of work.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It's kind of Blade Runner clock in situation.
Oh, wow. Is there... I guess that's just for... so people aren't, you know, covering each other's shifts and not saying anything.
People clocking in for other people when they're not there.
Okay.
So that kind of makes that hard to do.
Sure. Sure.
I don't think you're willing to give up your thumb to skim off a couple hours. But I think, as far as from a business standpoint, they're less concerned with protecting people from fraud.
Mm-hmm.
As they are protecting themselves from losing money by people calling their credit card company and saying, I didn't buy that. That wasn't me.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a whole circle now of people ripping people off through fraud, and then people knowing that that's happening and using that to their advantage.
Oh, wow.
So the business takes as many information points as they can to verify, yes, this was you. There's nothing else we could have done.
You know, I actually did not, I was not thinking of it in that direction. But that is very...
I mean, they require a credit card number, the expiration date, which is what it used to just be.
Right.
But now that everybody's onto the whole fraud thing, they also require billing zip code and the code on the back. I mean, that seems like a lot.
Yeah.
For some purchases, that makes sense. But if it's a big enough issue for a business to be changing its policies, I wonder how much more widespread that is.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a good point, because I was really only thinking of it from a fraud of someone saying they or saying they can pay and then not paying.
As soon as, in any system, as soon as there's a crack, people are going to take advantage of it. I mean, that's the internet.
Right.
We live in internet culture now. I mean, that's, people are so used to gaming the system.
Yeah. Yeah. I, one of the things that I was looking at, in the kind of paperless or even credit cardless kinds of transaction thing was Bitcoin. Have you heard of Bitcoin?
No, I haven't heard of that.
So I heard of it a while ago, and it's essentially digital cash that is not, in their case, it's not tied to any specific currency like the dollar or whatever, you know, the euro or anything like that. It's supposedly based completely in math. Essentially, you find there are a finite number. Someone has figured out mathematically there are a finite number of, like, this kind of prime number times this kind of prime number factors, say. And so what people do is because there are only so many of those numbers that exist mathematically, there's a finite number, it becomes like gold. There's a finite amount of gold, and supposedly your money is tied back to gold. So what's the difference between, you know, something tied back to, you know, gold versus something that's tied back to, like, math? And I like the idea of that, and it's kind of interesting, mainly because money being tied to gold doesn't really exist anymore. Like, you can't.
There's not enough gold.
Yeah.
Well, you can't. Way too much money.
Right. You can't go back and say, well, I want, you know, my $20 worth of gold, the actual gold that this $20 represents. You can't go to a bank and demand that. You can't go to the federal government and actually ask for that. I mean, that was a big thing, apparently, like, when they were trying to figure out how money worked and everything like that. But now it's so fluid and mostly electronic anyway, it seems interesting to base something completely off of math. But the interesting thing about the math-based money is that it is really built as a completely anonymous thing. So even though it's digital cash, they don't have to tie it to a person like they do with a credit card, like if,
or like PayPal, someone, or something.
Right, right. If anybody swipes a credit card or pays with PayPal, there is an account somewhere with a name on it that is probably yours, and it goes through, assuming you're not being fraudulent or whatever. But
right.
But the thing with the Bitcoin Cash is that it's completely anonymous, and it's built to be completely anonymous.
So do you just have like a PIN number or some sort of account number that is just yours, or?
Well, so you get a signature for that. You essentially get debit cards. Uh-huh. is the way it works out. It's debit cards without names on them, is kind of how it works. So they're pre-charged kind of accounts that you can get at any time, and you don't have to tie a name to it when you get it. You just get.
So it's like a GoPhone for money.
Right. Right.
Sounds great for the
right. Exactly. So
criminal class.
It immediately turns into a nefarious purposes kind of cash, which is actually the way I heard of it in the most recent iteration of it. Because I'd heard of e-cash and the idea of e-cash like years and years and years ago, like when I think it was through Wired magazine when it was cool, and way, way back in the 1990s, and they had an article about how, you know, it was essentially that, like, you know, strong, big, crazy cryptography could be used to generate, you know, cash. And so they didn't really have a name for it. It was more conceptual. But just 6 months ago, I heard of Bitcoin in reference to a story about, like, this underground, essentially underground drug and weapons market that is run completely on the internet through
sounds like the best eBay ever.
Yeah. I think it was even called that. It may have even been called like the underground eBay or something like that in the article that I'd read. But it based itself on Bitcoin as their money, and you can only get into the website if you know one of the addresses that you can use to get in, and you have to be using a special, like, internet proxying VPN service in order to get into it. And so there's this crazy set of steps, which aren't hard, because I was able to look at it, at least. But the interesting thing is, even though it's anonymous in that you don't have to have a real name, your money doesn't have to be tied to a real name, anything like that, it still has a reputation kind of level. You can't just go buy, you know, whatever the most expensive thing is.
You gotta start out small.
You apparently do. There is kind of a there's a,
I'd like 3,000 slingshots, please. When can I buy bazookas?
Right. I mean, there's a rating system, just like on eBay. And so when your rating gets above like this certain level, then you are, you know, are legitimate.
That sounds unquote, like a service unquote. I wouldn't want some negative feedback on.
Right. So, I mean, you know, illegitimate kind of transactions kind of aside, I wonder if, you know, if given what we know about data mining and Google and information like databasing and stuff like that, if like truly anonymous cash is just gonna go away, because like as things move more into kind of digital methods of payment, is buying stuff with cash even gonna be viable anymore?
Well, as long as we have old people, I'm pretty sure cash will still have some value.
Oh, when do I get to be classified as an old person? I really have to, I don't know. I have to start socking money away in my mattress or something. be nice. I don't know. I just think that was an interesting thing that my mind kind of went down like while I was riding my bike this week.
Bikes are a good place to do some thinking.
A lot of time, especially since I the route that I take isn't paved, and so I have to be somewhat, and it's on a levee, like by the evaporation ponds near Moffett Field. You don't want to fall into there. So I keep my I don't play music. I don't have anything like, you know, really high level distracting me. So I kind of have a lot of kind of headspace time. You know, all I have to do is keep my eyes about 100 feet in front of me so I can tell when the turns are coming up. But for the most part, my mind is free to wander for random stuff like that. I've really been enjoying biking. It was not something that I did in any regularity. And I've done 3 rides in 3 weeks. So it's been working, I guess. I should wrap it up soon, maybe, hopefully. It's about a 9-mile ride, and
that's not too bad.
Yeah, from here to work is 13 miles, so I feel like I can do it. I just have to do it.
Is that extra time?
Yeah.
Which we have so much of.
Yes, exactly. Especially now with the Olympics on. I have no extra time. I mean, I'm kind of an Olympics junkie. I really like watching a lot of the sports and the events. And so I have everything set to record and I watch them when it's on. I am, however, quite put out by NBC's coverage, or kind of lack thereof.
Yeah, I haven't heard a lot of good things about that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they're getting all sorts of money because of, you know, it's really the only thing that you can get to from a TV anyway to watch the games. I mean, it just shows that even though there are like a lot of ways to watch the games on a computer, they're still not, you know, so accessible that you can just throw it onto a TV and everything's gravy.
They need Olympic C-SPAN, I think. Cut out the commentary, cut out all the commercials.
So Olympics on the BBC is like that.
Really?
The commentary is really much more country neutral, despite being
less jingoistic, even though they're hosting the games.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's phenomenal. It's actually really impressive. They definitely will profile the winners of the sports, the people that are favorites, but they won't. They don't pretend that the British are the only ones in the Olympics, or that the favorites are the only ones in the games. So they will show the events from the other teams, or the interesting stories from other countries seem to be more prevalent than much more prevalent than in the U.S., where they might show like one profile from some country, and it's like, oh, this. It's the sprinter with no legs guy, you know, with the artificial limbs.
Pistorius.
Yes. They'll show his.
That guy can get as much screen time as he wants. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
It is pretty cool, but that's the only non-US person that they're doing like profiles on right now, or it seems that way on NBC. And I just I'm so frustrated by how they're handling the time difference. I mean, I understand there's a time difference, and I understand that things have to be tape delayed in order to kind of pull things together. And I can understand things being tape delayed for primetime viewing. What I don't understand is every once in a while there are things that are not tape delayed, or there's the ability for it not to be tape delayed, and they won't show it live. Like all of the stuff from the track last night, you know, the 100 meter dash for the men, for example, was run, you know, in the late morning here in Pacific time, but they don't show it until almost 11:30 at night, you know, as the coverage kind of breaks down. And
it's a good thing there's nowhere else that you can find out the results accidentally,
right? Or even from NBC.
And from NBC.
From NBC. NBC will just tweet who won. And it's like, why? With all of the time that they like spend showing like the social media graph that Ryan Seacrest is doing.
Seacrest needs his FaceTime.
I guess. So it's extremely frustrating to me, all of the stuff around the way NBC's covering it, because even if they're tape delaying it and they're time compressing it to fit it in that primetime slot to kind of pull together, I still feel like they should be it could be much more comprehensive. They could do things like here's the events that happened that day, and I feel like they do that like once and it's over in like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And somehow they wrap up the whole rest of the coverage in 3 minutes. And I feel like if it were treated more like a little more journalistically, then it would be nicer, because they would cut between segments, they would have more of the athletics going. I mean, the interviews are interesting because you can get the human element of it, but I feel like I can get the human element of how the games are because I'm a human, and I don't need it to be spoon-fed to me who to root for and why to root for them.
Well, it seems like the TV would be a better venue to actually show events and the competition, because that's what people want to see, and use the internet as a place to pick up those other stories and fill things out from there. That seems like that would make more sense to me.
Yeah, there are a ton of ways, I think, that they can do it. I mean, the other annoying thing for me is that even though there's the streaming that NBC is providing, and they do have cameras at every event, and they have streams available, but the streams are always available after they've aired on TV.
I didn't know that.
Even like the gymnastics final, for example, I knew it was going to be late getting home to watch, and I wasn't sure if I wanted to watch it. You know, in prime time, I had heard, unfortunately, from NBC that they had already occurred and who won, and so it was just like I wanted to see a couple events online, and I go to the stream and it's blank. There's no stream until for certain events right away. Like it seems like the ones that they weren't showing in prime time, they were holding back until later that day, or or I don't know if they've ever like actually posted what that streaming like delay policy is, but the fact that there's a delay on the streaming, it boggles me. I don't understand.
That seems more corporate meddling-y.
Yeah, it does.
Than actual reason to do that.
But somewhere where there wasn't a lot of corporate meddling, because there isn't any, as far as I know, was the Martian rover landing last night. So go NASA.
Go humans.
Yes. That was really, really cool. Were you watching that on TV or on the internet?
I unfortunately was working, okay. So everything I've seen has been after the fact.
Okay.
I get my own tape delay.
Yes. So I was actually in a car on the way home, and I was just on Twitter and watching, you know, people that I know who were tweeting and following other people, like, live as it was happening. It's like, this person retweeted, so I'm going to go follow the first person that tweeted and, like, see what they are. And I was, like, getting closer and closer to, you know, I'd followed NASA. I followed NASA. I followed Phil Plait, Bad Astronomer. I followed Will Wheaton, because apparently he did something, like, a video that they showed at NASA Ames in Mountain View last night and stuff like here's this stuff about Curiosity, all this stuff. There are apparently a lot of people at NASA Ames just to watch. Like, they'd set up huge screens and you could like sit out on the lawn and watch, and there were just a lot of events surrounding it. And the crazy thing was, it was live.
We can get live from Mars. We can't get live from London.
Yeah, I saw a graphic today. It was so great. It was, thousands and thousands of miles, 14-minute delay, 4,000 miles, 8-hour delay. Maybe NASA should do the coverage for the Olympics,
Got to take the money out of the equation, and maybe that's what does it. Expedites things.
Oh, yeah. I think it's amazing how little money NASA had, essentially, to be able to pull something like that off.
To go to another planet?
Yeah.
Another planet on a shoestring? I mean, billions of dollars isn't necessarily a shoestring, but in the grand scheme of things, of how much money the government spends,
yeah,
it's really not that much.
No. I read a stat somewhere that it's like $7 for every person in the U.S.
I would pay more than that.
Right. Exactly. I would probably pay a lot more than that to do something cool in space. I think that is not not a badly spent endeavor.
Yeah, I'd rather see my money spent there than on
a lot of things.
experimental aircraft program that costs billions of dollars and then doesn't really work quite the way they thought it would.
Oh. Well, anyway, the stuff that I was seeing over Twitter was just ridiculous. Like the target landing space for the lander was something like, it was a pretty wide thing. It was maybe 20 by 30 miles.
I think it was 4.3 by 12 was what I read today.
Oh, okay. Wow, that's a lot smaller than I thought. Because I read that they were less than, like, 2 miles off in either direction.
Yeah.
You know. And I still can't get over that. Like, you can launch, essentially, something the equivalent size of a car or an SUV.
Drop an SUV, a nuclear-powered SUV on another planet.
Right. Fling it through space and be... be within 3 to 4 miles of your target. That's crazy. That's just amazing.
Yet people still drive into lakes with their tom-tom.
Oh, that's something that shouldn't be allowed. I know a lot of people that I guess it's just habit, if they have GPS in their car or if they had GPS at any one time, that they just always have it on. And I've lived through a couple iterations of GPS, and I don't have one specifically in my car, but I can't. I will use it like on my phone, for example. Like if I have to go to a place for the very first time and I've never been there, and you know I don't really know the streets or I don't know the area, but pretty much every time after that I can just do it. It's not. Yeah. I don't need to have the GPS to get like to my regular place of business. Say, it's like that time is fairly fixed, and I, you know, the variances in and around that aren't super, they're not so large that I can't deal with it. Like even if I had a long commute, like I feel like the you just build in more time for that commute because you know it's going to take longer. If it's going to take longer for you, it's going to take longer for everyone else that's taking that route too. And it's thankfully I've never been in a job that was so, you know, draconian about time checking or anything that I guess it matters.
Not a place that made you scan your thumb to clock in and out.
Fair enough. But I think for a job like that, I wouldn't be traveling more than,
that's,
you know,
true. Yeah.
I don't think it's worth it. It's not worth my hour commute or anything like that.
How many hours is Highway 17 stolen from me?
Oh, it's probably true. Yes. Probably as many as a lot of the NBC delay kind of fits in between there and there, you know.
Yeah. I think it would be kind of nice to see a crossover between, I mean, they're doing this now. NASA just signed that new program with a bunch of different space exploration companies.
Yeah, the XPRIZE.
Yeah. XPRIZE. Mm-hmm. Well, like, I think what they should have done, since they're saying this, the new probe or the new rover is about the size of an SUV.
Mm-hmm.
If they had been smart, someone like Chevy or Ford, they could have gotten in on that. We get the Ford Curiosity.
Oh, yeah.
Take their GPS with them.
Right.
That's all the advertising you would ever need.
That's true. All they had to do.
It'll get you to Mars and back.
Yeah.
The power like by a rock, a Martian rock.
Right. Powered by OnStar. Yeah. You know, it's just made for it. It's totally made for it. Yeah.
AT&T not allowed to be involved.
No.
They get no coverage on Mars. On any planet.
Right. They barely get coverage here, in my opinion. And I will attest to that, having had AT&T for quite a while, despite the number of other options I could have now, at least.
Well, if anything, humans can endure.
Yeah.
It's that endurance that'll take us to the stars.
Oh, yeah. I have to look at the Planetary Society and the other things that are built around, you know, supporting NASA, at least in some way. I feel like, you know, it feels like it needs you know, a little more of a grassroots effort. I know as much as they've tried to get the federal government to kick down some more cash, it's kind of rough for them. I mean, it's not KQED public television rough.
No.
Like, you know,
give it time. Give it time. Start seeing NASA pledge drives. We interrupt this launch.
Right.
They have some new totes to give out.
They already have the big room with the tables and all of the headsets and everything.
Oh, that's true. They are kind of set up. They got countdown timers.
Right. Oh, you know.
We're onto something.
If it ever goes that way, they're prepared. You could always count on NASA to be prepared for that emergency backup plan. Oh, so what do I have on the old notebook? Things that are okay. I have a couple things that I wish were things, and a couple things that I wish were not things.
All right, let's
just let it rip. Okay, yeah. I think something that should be a thing that isn't. And it's mostly for legal reasons, probably, is home distilling. I think, because I'm not an avid home brewer. I've done it. I haven't done it in the last, like, 3 months, but I like it. It's not, and it's not difficult. It's very much, you know, if you can make
tea, you can make beer.
Essentially.
If you can clean and you can make tea, you can make beer.
The cleanliness part is very important. But for the most part, you're just mixing ingredients, boiling it, cooling it, like straining it a couple times, and you're pretty much set. You're going to have beer, and it's going to taste pretty good compared to, you know, how beer tastes. And I feel like the extra step of, like, evaporating some of the water off strategically should not be illegal. I feel like it should be cautioned against, because it's, you know, you can produce things that are probably harmful, but I don't think it's any more harmful than any of the stuff that you can produce around the house generally.
Yeah. If you've got household cleaners, you're going to do as much damage as if you're making whiskey.
Well, I know the relationship with the U.S. and, like, alcohol is very interesting. You know, the U.S. prohibited it for quite a while, like, by law, you know, completely around. There's a lot of weird nuances about liquor licensing for, like, restaurants and things like that, and even, like, home production of brewing. Technically, home brewing is legal, but it's legal up to some weird number, like 200 gallons or something like that. And, like, if you're doing 200 gallons worth of homebrew, I don't know. I mean, you're not home brewing. You're just brewing at that point. Which I don't see why that's illegal either. I mean, is that just an anti-competition measure with companies, you know, that want to do it? Because I don't see what the issue is for that.
No, it's another opportunity to make more money. Yeah. Permits aren't free.
Yeah. So it has, you have to have a permit in order to make money.
You gotta spend money to make money.
Okay,
I can understand that. That's how capitalism works.
I can understand that. So if you're producing it for sale, then you have to get a permit, is the way I see it. But if you're producing it to give away, then I think it should be unregulated.
What if we were to work out some sort of beer bartering system?
Yeah, then you're getting around paying for it, is what it is. So that's probably what where the rub is in that, but I don't know. I've never made an alcohol or a beer that was higher than, say, 6%. But I've heard it's not difficult to make a beer that is above, say, 10%. I mean, there's a limit of what you can do, because the yeasts involved, like, can't get above a certain level before they start dying or start. But I feel like that limit is pretty high, like above, like, 15-ish.
Mm-hmm.
You can get pretty blasted off of a 10% beer.
Blasted off a 5% beer. You just got to drink two.
You have to drink enough.
You're
right?
Drinking double. You know, yeah. You're going to get that same effect.
Right. So I feel like if it's an alcoholism thing they're trying to combat by saying, you know, don't make hard liquor. I feel like that's not a real enough kind of lock on it.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but I seem to remember hearing something about stills exploding, which that seems like it could be a major reason why they don't allow that. I don't know if your homeowner's insurance covers stills.
Well, but if you're if you're doing something that is explosive in nature, I feel like that's still
safe and sane drinking.
Yeah,
those things just—that doesn't make it's a non sequitur.
No, no. You can only drink the beers that spin around really fast on the ground, or fountain. You know,
yeah,
not
Not is that, is that what is that what near beer is? Is this like the equivalent of ground blooms?
Oh golly, yeah. We actually have a bottle of I think it's Klosshaller or I don't remember the name. It's non-alcoholic. I don't know why it's in our fridge. I think someone brought it over
as a joke.
As a joke at one of the parties and left it there because I am not having it. It's not a thing for me. But
like opening your fridge and finding a Zima. Like, what are you doing here? Your kind isn't welcome. There's no equality in the beverage world.
Oh, yikes. Or, yeah, that's not right. I lost my train of thought. That's okay. We were talking about distilling and...
Explosions.
Explosions, that's what it was. Well, yeah, but you're driving a car all the time, and that those.
But
things...
they're designed not to explode. Well, I'm pretty sure there's a rigorous process they have to go through before they can sell you a car.
But so, if there were a rigorous process involved in buying a still, if it were a regulated, kind of insured kind of thing with a warranty and that, stuff like that,
that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to distill alcohol with, like, you know, the commercial level the commercial level rates. Because it takes some amount of time to brew beer. I mean, it's something like 3 weeks. Like two if you like don't care how it tastes, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But three weeks is a pretty good kind of time frame for that. If I could make even like a bottle of alcohol in 3 weeks, if it ended up some kind of slow, methodical process, that would be fine with me. That would be really cool, I think, just from a like DIY perspective. I like the home brewing kind of aspect of things, and I feel like home distilling kind of fits in there.
Well, you could even have something like a community garden, but for making
booze.
It's like where you come and you bring your ingredients, sure, and you plant them in the barrels, mm-hmm, and you do, and let it do its magic.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you go pick it up, you get your alcohol. It's easier to regulate.
Sure. I like this halfway. This could work. Like you work with a existing distiller that lets you kind of like craft distill your own kind of bottle.
That'd be a niche market.
That is pretty cool. I'm sure licensing would not allow them to do that.
Well, write your congressman.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. That's the
Twitter blast. That is congressman.
The new answer to everything on the Not a Thing podcast. So, how do you think of what do you think about this? Oh, write your congressman.
Things that are not a thing. The way to fix that: write your congressman.
Things that are
did we,
a thing.
Did we just coin a catchphrase?
We might have just do. I think write your congressman might have been around a little earlier. However,
I'm totally up for co-opting things.
Okay. Hey, we don't have any internet going right now. I bet it's ours. We'll do a little research and
search for writeyourcongressman.com and then see if that's taken.
Quick to hover. Okay. So the other thing that I think is a thing and should not be. And I ran into this also over the weekend, is I was walking through downtown San Jose, right along the, you know, that breezeway kind of walkway thing that's between, you know, if you go to the park at where the Tech Museum is and you go across that.
Where the water fountain thing is?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
If you go through that and then there's the Fairmont Hotel, and you're walking past that, there's a guy shouting, essentially, you know, his mostly Christian rhetoric from there. And I'm not going to go in the direction of, you know, I don't like what he was saying, because even though I didn't, it just happened to be that I didn't like how it was being said, in that he was amplified. And that was surprising to me. Like,
seems like you need a permit for that.
Yeah, right? You know, so I was surprised that you could stand on a street and, you know, with essentially a microphone and a speaker and essentially just be calling people out for whatever reason. I mean, his kind of spiel was somewhat annoying, but even if it were
someone with a microphone who is annoying?
Yeah. But even if it were something pleasant, that's what terrifies me. It's like it's amplified. You're still in a public place. You're still in a space where people are kind of walking through, and if they don't want to be, you know, around it, you have to walk a lot further away from something that's amplified versus some person who's, you know, just shouting.
I don't think that's something they accounted for when they drafted the First Amendment.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of free speech. Don't get me wrong. But it is interesting. I wonder what the stance is for amplification or not of.
I would guess that it's not legal, but unless you saw a cop standing around.
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, it was. I didn't stick around to see if anyone was stopping.
Maybe that's what he's banking on, is that everyone's just going to walk away. Because they either like what I'm saying or they're annoyed. No one's going to bother me.
Yeah. Yeah, because I know, my immediate thought was, they should just ban amplification of, you know, if you're going to be out and yelling or whatever. Like, but then I realized it runs counter to like buskers, you know, people are just playing music, because let's say your instrument is a theremin, you know, or something that requires amplification in order to, you know, a synthesizer.
Have you ever seen a busking theremin player?
I have not, but
that's going on the bucket list.
Right. We're going to have to look for that.
Spend an afternoon busking with a theremin.
I have a theremin. We could do this. We could do this. It would probably be strangely received.
We should find out if that guy is there and then battle off with him. Oh. Amp on amp.
Oh, I like it. I like this.
Theremin versus rhetoric.
Yeah. But I think that's... There's got to be... there probably are limits for... I think you're right. I'm sure there are limits for how loud you can be, but it requires someone to complain for that to kick in. Like I know, like, car alarms are stupidly loud, and there's kind of supposed to be, but it's not illegal to have a car alarm or have one go off until... It is essentially right. Until it starts, you know, infringing on, you know, disturbing the peace or whatever. But I
guess the idea of that's kind of a legal chicken,
sure.
Because it's kind of like, all right, are you gonna write me a ticket for my excessive noise, or are you gonna stop that guy who's trying to steal my car?
Yeah,
that takes precedence.
Okay. Well, that was my only other thing that was. That come up to me over the last couple of days.
Yeah, definitely that. I agree. Okay. Should not be a thing.
Should not be a thing. Write your congressman. We'll keep this up. We'll see how it goes. You know, we're still kind of figuring out the wild and woolly methods of pulling this together. One thing that should be a thing that is not yet is our website.
Yes. We should do that.
Yes, we should. We should. I guess we can tell everyone what it is, because it'll go up before this does, probably, right?
Yes.
The website will. Whether this specific podcast goes up, you know, before the website goes up or not. I mean, it has to, right? It's a chicken egg thing. It's
yes. You can't release without a place to release it.
Yes. So it's... correct me if I'm wrong, notathingpodcast.org? Or is it .com? Oh, no! Apparently, our memory of our domain name is currently not a thing.
Check my email.
Yeah. Well, we're definitely going to have to write our congressman about that one to get that fixed up.
I don't think we need to go that far. I just need to write my email.
Okay. Well, we'll look. We'll look. But hopefully we'll have this and...
We can edit that. Yes. That's all. We can cut all this out.
Yes. Editing is still a thing and will always be. Should always be a thing.
Yes.
For us. Do not write your congressman about it.
No.
So, we'll have this and probably other podcasts up on the website soon. And we hope everyone can check them out and let us know how it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think
so. Sounds good to me.
All right. Excellent.
All right. Well, then, until next time.